Call the regular Newcastle County Council Public Safety Committee meeting to order. Let me first acknowledge council that's in attendance today, and then we'll move for the approval of minutes. Councilwoman Kilpatrick. Councilman, I'll be good this afternoon. Street. Councilman Hollins. Councilman Smiley. Councilman Cartier. Councilman Diller. Councilwoman Diller. And Karen Barlow, my legislative aide. Joe Retta is excused this afternoon. Bill Powers is running a little bit late. He's on his way. And also Timmy Sheldon is excused this afternoon due to another commitment. And we have with us President Chris Bullock. And Councilman Dave Tackett has joined us. So.
Motion to approve the minutes of May 14th.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of May 14th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay, first on the agenda today, we have Ordinance 13-044, which is to amend the grants budget, appropriate funding for the 2014 to the Contracted Police Duty Revolving Fund for the Department of Public Safety. And also Councilman Bob Weiner has joined us. This particular ordinance is to appropriate the necessary funding for the Contracted Police Duty Revolving Fund for police services. And as we know, it's performed on a contractual basis during the course of the year. And the Director of Public Safety, as well as our Chief Financial Officer, work together on the Contracted Police Duty Revolving Fund and everything. Is there any question on the particular ordinance? We do have Director Bryant and Colonel Setting here this afternoon if there's any particular question. Colonel Setting?
Sir.
Any Councilman Cartier?
Just a little bit of detail on this would be helpful, please.
Detail on what, sir? I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
Ordinance 13-044. Contracted duty, police duty revolving fund.
Take a look. Colonel, if you want, we'll go to Ed Milowicki, probably from the finance department. Get a revolving
department. Ed Milowicki from the finance office.
Go ahead.
Okay. Every year we come back to council. This is a revolving fund, so we estimate the amount of hours that are contracted out based on prior years of service that we receive for use of the police services. And then there's an hourly rate that's worked out up. The current rate is $61, and that rate will remain the same for next year, $61 for a police officer to be used through the contract duty fund. But this just sets up the fund for the year. And then money is deposited as the services are used. Okay. It's a revolving fund. Expenditures go out, revenue comes in to pay for those services.
Councilman?
Yes, do we ever experience any delinquencies in the fund?
That is rare, sir, but that's exactly what the fund is for, is so that if we work a job based on our contract with the union, we get paid a certain amount of money for those hours, and that money is there so we get paid up front. Then we actually go back to the vendor, bill them, and they pay us. And we do it that way because if you don't do it that way, you lose a lot of vendors that you know can't contract out. You know, they want to be paid up front.
Yeah.
They just go with another agency for the pay job. We prefer that, you know, stuff that's in our jurisdiction that we work that pay job. So every once in a blue moon, you know, somebody will try and welch us on a couple of bucks here and there, mm-hmm. but we've been pretty good at getting our money back. And about, I can't think of any particular case, Joe, recently where we lost any money or anything to that effect.
So we,
please identify yourself.
Public safety fiscal. Well, we took it over in August of 2005. Mm-hmm. We built out about $4.5 million. Our write-off is about $2,000.
Okay.
Okay, Councilman Street.
What fool gonna try to rob the police?
Colonel, would you like to answer that?
It doesn't happen that often. What will happen is every once in a while, somebody that's not really a business they'll say they're having a party of 500 people. They'll put it on Facebook. They'll hire a police officer for security. And you find out they're a fly-by-night or whatever, and they don't pay. But, it's very, very rare.
Okay.
And if we find them, Councilman, we're going to make them pay.
I figured that.
Council President said you'd be surprised.
He's going to pray for them.
Okay, we also, Councilman Joe Retta has joined us in the beginning of the meeting here. Any other question or input on this particular ordinance? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to the next order of business. I'd like to call on Director of Public Safety, Joe Bryant. This afternoon, we'll have a brief presentation on the Office of Emergency Management. Director?
Good afternoon. Again, this is Bryant Jr. I am the Public Safety Director. It's kind of coincidental in that we had this this storm last night that caused a lot of havoc down in the Newark area, that we have the opportunity to hear from the person in charge of our Office of Emergency Management, as well as his team, to talk about the vision in general, but to take some time and talk specifically about what happened last night, as well as today. So I'd like to introduce you to everyone, Dave Carpenter.
Thank you, Director.
Thanks, sir.
Didn't get much sleep the last couple days, did you?
Nah, not the last couple of days. A couple of late nights, Friday night and Saturday, and last night and tonight. Good afternoon, Council. Dave Carpenter, Jr., Coordinator of Emergency Management for Mecassa County. If you'd like, I can start off on what we originally wanted to present on, and then I can touch on, so I don't cut into Dom's time, on the incident last night. Generally, originally we were here for a presentation on my team and what emergency management brings to the table, and a couple of the items that we definitely wanted to highlight today from our perspective is, one, as most of you know, we were just recently recognized for National Flood Insurance Protection getting into the volunteer program for community rating system. I wanted to try to highlight that a little bit and give you a little more understanding of what that award was for, since in the highlight of the council meeting you might not have digested that, especially on budget vote night, when I know a bunch of other items were running through your head. The other items that I'll touch on is our ongoing community emergency response team training and the success of that in the past years. It drops off every so often, but we've had recent success with it again, and we're trying to push that out to the community members as much as possible. Given the events of last night and this past weekend, it's definitely a highlight of our programs that we have. The other one I want to touch on is our responses and those type of responses, and I'll touch on that last because we'll get into the recapping the incident last night a little bit and update. And then I want to introduce you to the team that has come on board over the past couple years. As you know, through some years we've had some challenges with. We get very qualified people on board, and they get more qualified, and they move on to higher positions paying-wise, salary-wise, and they move on to something else. And so we lose them, so we keep getting really good people back. I want to start off with the first planner we hired about 2 years ago is Joe Cochran. A lot of you here are familiar with Joe from previous terms as a legislative aide here. He serves currently as our primary person for the radiological emergency plan, which is the off-site impacts for the Salem Hope Creek Nuclear Power Plant Station. He's also tasked with completing our threat incident management plan, which is our facility evacuation plans for all of our county facilities. Catching them up to speed, we've been the past couple weeks out to several of the libraries, instructing the library employees on what to do for a facility evacuation and the procedures, and then training them, and also tweaking their plans and adjusting their plans and revising them for each individual site. In addition to that, he carries out the efforts for our continuity of operations plan, and both of those plans we'll touch on probably a little more in detail at a future council committee meeting, where we can go into executive session, because I know Councilman Weiner asked before about the continuity of operations plan. My other planner is working currently on our overall comprehensive emergency management plan, and once we get those the base plan initiated for that, we will come back for a briefing to all of you as stakeholders and go under executive session, since some of those items under the both of those plans is not for public access. In addition to that, Joe works on the logistics for our division, a lot of our supplies and our maintainer supplies, and also updating our EOC technology such as GIS mapping and our satellite communications that we have. In addition to that, his background really is wide and varied. He has 17 years in volunteer fire service, 4 years in the U.S. Marine Corps and Reserve, 7 years working as a county council staff member here, doing community outreach and liaisoning with state, local, and county government agencies. So his role in emergency management fits right in. His bachelor's is in political science, public administration. So again, that fits right into political savvy and citizen savvy out in the world and building the relationships that we need to do. Also, his technology and work in the technology field fits right in with his role that he has taken over in our office, which is supporting us in some of our technology needs and keeping up with GIS. The other planner I have is Dave Scott. Dave is a retired captain from the U.S. Coast Guard. Over 30 years of service in the U.S. Coast Guard. He came on board last July with us. Experiences are multitude, of course, with the Coast Guard. Served primarily with marine environmental safety inspections overseas and in domestic U.S. His final assignment here in the Coast Guard was commanding officer of the port, what's called the Delaware Bay Sector Port, which is the entire Delaware River, New Jersey coast and Delaware coast and all the inland and river area of that, commanding the entire force that protects us along the Delaware River. Dave's duties right now after retiring and coming to us after several years of being in the consultant world is he has taken on the revision of our comprehensive emergency management plan. He also does our training, our CERT training, and also handles a lot of our coordination of our exercises that we have, either tabletop, full scale, or functional exercises that we've been doing. Dave holds a Master in Marine Affairs from the University of Rhode Island and a MA in Management and Supervision from Central Michigan University, along with a BA in Legal Studies from the University of Massachusetts. He's also a certified ISO 9000 quality system auditor and assessor, and they're both, through their service here, have gone through the National Hazardous Materials Technician Certification course. So they're both hazmat tech certified through NFPA. We all also maintain membership, all three of us maintain membership with the International Association of Emergency Managers and the First State Chapter, which is a local chapter of Association of Contingency Planners. And one of the key aspects of emergency management really came to light last night in our role. Reason why we don't see a lot of us is, or a lot of us, is because every day we're working behind the scenes to establish the relationships we need when something like last night happens. And that we do through some of these associations and organizations that we participate in and some of the exercises and drills we participate in. The ACP, the Association of Contingency Planners, is all the disaster recovery specialists for the corporate and the business entities around here in Newcastle County and the rest of the state of Delaware and some other government entities. So that builds that network and relationships that we can reach out to them for resources, for assistance, and it's a face-to-face name, first name basis with those partners. Similarly, last night in building the relationships, it was a very gelled and very effortless teamwork effort between Aetna Fire Company, the county police, DelDOT, the power company, DP&L, emergency management, and the Red Cross. I don't know if I'm forgetting anybody. All on scene, and Verizon, all on scene. And the leaders of those organizations have always meet at associations meetings. We participate in drills and exercises together. We're all on a first-name basis. We knew what roles and responsibilities were. And as we came together at certain points during the incident last night, it really clicked as our mindsets were both thinking the same things that we're at this point, and we know we've checked off these items, and we're ready to move forward on this process. And it really went very well last night. The one of the key programs that you have in front of you that I'll touch on right now is the National Flood Insurance Protection Community Rating System. The county had been had a strong effort in trying to get into this program years ago. The difficulty with it is there was a lot of documentation. When I say a lot of documentation, more than what maybe Mr. Wasserbach required of our audit recently, we had to collect a lot of information on our ordinances, our floodplain management program, all of our outreach efforts, whether or not we reached out to the Board of Realtors, whether we reached out to the insurance industry, and document all that and provide that to the insurance services organization, and they evaluate it, and there's specific criteria for every little matter, and we get credit points for that. As we get credit points, there's certain levels, 500, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 points. As you hit those levels, then you are awarded, after you're certified by ISO, a class rating for New Castle County, which we achieved a class rating of 8, because we had 1,000 points, just over 1,000 points. We actually had about 1,420 points. We were about 900 shy of 1,500, which is a good thing because you don't want to just be over the limit of the next class rating, because if something falls and you fall below that, that's going to impact the citizens. They're going to see that in their flood insurance policy. That hopefully that'll give you a good synopsis of that program going forward. As I said, that gives the residents in the floodplain a special flood hazard a 10% discount on their flood insurance policy. It gives those outside a 5% discount. It also gives anybody with a secondary home that happens to have a secondary home in New Castle County a 5% discount also. The other item I want to highlight is our community emergency response team training. This is the 14-hour program I've spoken before. Teaches fire safety, CPR, AED, highlights some other items as far as search and rescue, medical first aid, medical triaging, and then also teaches general disaster preparedness, disaster psychology. It really equips the public and the citizens out there to deal with something that they impacted yesterday, that they could come together with their community members. They understand what emergency responses, role and responsibilities are, and they understand what their role as citizens are, to help out other citizens as much as they can, provide immediate care, immediate maybe possible search and rescue for light debris or light areas only, and then turn everything over to emergency responders when they get there. Based upon the premise years ago when the earthquakes happened in outside of San Francisco during the World Series, that emergency responders could not access most of the areas, and the public was actually starting to do rescues. This class is really pretty intense, packed in. It's usually a Friday night and an all-day Saturday. Friday night from about 5 to 9, and then Saturday from 8 to 4:30, and we go through all those modules in that session. We have outside instructors that assist us. New Castle County EMS helps us greatly with the CPR and AED and the medical triage portion. We have some volunteer instructors that come in from other organizations like the Mental Health Organization or the Center for Disabilities from the University of Delaware to teach about disaster psychology. And then we have some other members from the fire service or our amateur radio community to kind of help us out in teaching search and rescue. And then also we have a member from the local emergency planning committee comes in and teaches hazardous materials response. So it's really covers the gamut. Over the past several years, just some small statistics. In 2010, we usually hold about 4 to 5 classes a year. We had a total attendance of 154 people. That we usually average about 25 to 30 each class. The class limit we like to hold it at is 40. I didn't have any information readily available for 2011, but it's basically the same because we had about the same amount of classes within attendance. 2012, we had 120, and in 2013 so far, we've had about 50 members attend. Our class coming up in July 26th and 27th, is currently full. We're actually taking a waiting list right now for people that are reserving in case we have any open seats for July. The next class we're going to have is probably in November. Two groups that we really identify with those that we've, or three groups actually that we've trained a lot, is the State AmeriCorps members. We've trained all those every year for the past 3 years now. And then Civil Air Patrol members, we train them in that cert. And then also the Medical Reserve Corps, which is a volunteer group associated with public health preparedness. I think I went over my time a little bit, but
no, you're fine. You're fine.
Those are the two items I want to definitely highlight: the cert and the NFIP, and our planning, our credentials of our staff. I'll give you a real brief overview. Last night, I know most of you have gotten the email. I don't want to repeat what the email says. I know Councilwoman Diller was out there today, visiting the community. Again, I can't say enough about the amount of teamwork that went in with last night. Initially, reports and calls coming into the 911 center about a funnel cloud. There are some pictures circulating on the website about it. There are some videos that are not clear. But, however, there are definitely the National Weather Service went out today. I spoke to them about noon, about just after noon today. They confirmed with me this afternoon that they will be issuing out the status of the event as an EF0, which is the lowest possible tornado, a very weak tornado EF0 at 80 mile an hour winds, estimated 80 mile an hour winds that touched down for about a 3/10 to 4/10 mile stretch through the Robscott Manor, Yorkshire Robscott Manor community there, just across Route 4 and then lifted back up. The damage that is over in the Pleasant Valley Road area off of Woodland Village is attributed to straight line winds, potentially the beginnings of the cell that was moving through where the funnel had started, but then that had not reached the ground. Technical weather term, a funnel cloud is a funnel cloud. A tornado is the funnel cloud that actually touches the ground, and that's what certifies it, in addition to the visible damage that they see on the ground. We initially got the alert from the Weather Service and the 911 center. I activated staff partially in the EOC, in Emergency Operations Center, notified Director of Public Safety, and started heading towards that area to see how much damage we would have from reports from the 911 center. It seemed like the worst damage that we had was along Old Barmer Pike, just off Pleasant Valley Road, and then subsequent damages through the Yorkshire community, which is a combination of the city of Newark and Newcastle County unincorporated areas, and then the area of Robscott Manor. All in told, it looked like a really horrendous sight and bad sight, pretty much subsequent of what I've seen in past years, some severe straight-line wind storms that we've seen. Initially, Weather Service assistants out there and myself and fire department initially just thought that it would be all straight-line wind damage. And today, when the Weather Service got out there and started viewing a couple of things, they picked up on a couple of items, and with their radar from the Weather Service, they confirmed that it was an EF0 tornado. Right now, what initially was happening was obviously a rescue and searching of all the residences up and down the blocks and determining severe damage. Once that was done, the fire department stabilized and secured utilities that needed to those residences. We contacted the building inspectors and got a team of building inspectors out there. Four personnel there and one personnel went to Woodland Village. They responded out. We sent them out to all the severely damaged homes, and they inspected other ones that might be possibly damaged, and deemed seven homes unsafe. In Robscott Manor, one home unsafe in Woodland Village. The one home in Woodland Village was subsequently shored up by a contractor, and I believe they were able to let him in, let that house be deemed safe. That's what we have right now as of today. My suspect is that we will probably get some lingering calls in today through the event, that people will call in and identify more damage. And as we do, either later this afternoon or tomorrow morning, we'll get an update from the land use as to what calls they've received and how much building inspectors have added to that list. And then we'll compile that and determine from there where we can go. I don't foresee this being any level of a disaster declaration for the county. Given the limited amount of homes that are damaged, obviously there was a lot of homes that were struck by trees that were severely damaged, more than actual damage from the wind. But we do look like that. It looks like potentially that most of these will be handled by their individual insurance companies. Yes.
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah. Right. I just need to understand, I guess for all of us, those of us that have communities in flood zones that are paying flood insurance,
yes,
what should we be telling the community in order to make sure that they benefit and get the discount as a result of, you know, all the work you and your department have put in?
And it's also, and I give a lot of credit to John Geising. He was there from land use. He's the floodplain manager for the county. He did a pretty aligned share of the documentation from their aspect. But what you can tell people is it should be automatic when they renew their policy. If they don't notice a decrease, to make sure they contact their insurance agent and alert them to the fact that Newcastle County unincorporated area, and you have to make sure that they're in an unincorporated area,
right,
has been awarded voluntarily or into the community rating system program.
Okay, so it should be automatic.
Yeah.
But it won't go into effect until the renewal.
Until the renewal. It's prorated. The program is affected now, May 1st.
Yeah, but for them.
Right, exactly. So if my policy doesn't renew until July 1, I won't see that discount until I renew my
policy. Okay, it's not a prorated where it goes back. Okay, thank you.
Councilman Street?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I know that I have a responsibility to address this with the City of Wilmington, child care licensing, but this presentation is timely, and I'm going to ask you to help with this, because yesterday was a nightmare for me. The phone goes off, stream tornado. I get the notification in the email. Tornado warnings were 5:15. I got 100-some kids in the building. What am I supposed to do? We've got fire training. We've got fire drills. Never been any training provided for tornadoes. So am I supposed to tell the parents not to come, hurry up and come? The building, the entire building, two floors is above ground. So what am I supposed to do? Got an evacuation procedure. Did it evacuate to where? You don't move the kids in the storm. I frankly didn't know what the hell to do, but pray. And even though I'm in the city, I would suggest respectfully that to every child care facility in the county, probably every school, I haven't had the training. My staff hasn't had the training. I doubt if they had the training. We need some training in some direction as to I know I do. My staff and I need some training and direction as to procedures we should be following with the kids, instructions we should be giving the parents. The only thing I knew to do was shut evening program down, but 5:15 is pickup time. I got parents on the way, I got parents leaving, so what is my responsibility to them? To encourage them to stay, go, what?
Councilman, are you a center, a large family daycare, or a small, regular family daycare?
You know, it's a large community center that, okay, that has early childhood education before and after school, okay, and of course schools also had, in 5:15 school, even if school was in, I still had the school age kid.
About 6-7 years ago, the state Delaware of all child licensing enacted regulations for all child care centers, that they have to have an emergency plan in effect that addresses all natural disasters and how all hazards approach. There's templates on our website. You can go to our Office of Emergency Management website. We actually have under planning for, there's a tab for child care professionals. It actually has a template there from one of the larger child care centers in the nation, Bright Horizons Family Solutions. They allowed us to use that template for any center that wants to utilize that plan. It's pretty much a fill-in-the-blank planning method. And Office of Child Care Licensing provides, as far as their continuing education credits, every quarter a session that they put out for all their continuing education child care professionals, training in emergency planning and software. I've actually taught that course on several occasions. Other people in our Citizens Corps group, Bob George and Marnie Ming Lee from DEMA, teach the course, but typically that course is offered at least 4 times a year, I know, when they do their quarterly training.
And I understand what you're saying, and I can sit at my desk right now and I can reach and tell you exactly where my plan is, and I would suggest to you, although it's been approved, it's silent as to what I'm talking about we were going through yesterday, what I was going through yesterday, because I didn't want to panic my staff. Okay, it's silent as to what we're specifically supposed to do with a tornado warning.
It should be specified. That should be specified in your plan. That's actually in the regulations how specific your plan should be. So when you look at the regulations as your guidance, then you can put that in your plan. For tornadoes, our general guidance, our general message for everybody, I know that my media friends are here. Our general message is for you to go into the most interior room without doors and windows as much as possible, well, at least the door so you can get in there, but without limited windows. Interior room, if that includes being a basement, it can be a basement. Guidance is it should be in the most interior room, where there is less glass and less way for, you know, you to be struck by any flying debris. And that's the same thing with the same guidance is pretty much set for large child care centers and the schools for that instance. Once you get that warning, the key comes down is how you're getting notified for that warning. And one of the premises that we did was, I believe, no weather alert radios were sent out to child care centers and handed out.
There it is now. A little late, but it came.
And I mean, you can either that or they're very inexpensive as far as purchasing goes. and we can assist you. I know you're in the city. I would rather lean towards the city emergency manager, Director George Giles, and having him address you as a child care center in the city and work with OCL. But we're definitely, sir, we're always, George and I know each other very well, and we can hand in hand help out with different organizations.
All right. I appreciate that. Trust me, I'm going to do that. But, for example, we have fire drills. We have specific training with staff. We have specific training with kids as to what to do with the fire. I'm just respectfully suggesting that there should be, now that tornadoes, which I haven't experienced, and I'm a lifelong Delawarean, it's becoming a major problem across the country. It happened here yesterday, and I'm just respectfully suggesting that one of the things we may want to consider is doing some comparable training with staff and kids in child care facilities throughout the county and including schools.
Yeah, and we'll put that message out. We have about 175, I believe, was the last number of child care centers throughout the county, and that's rather challenging to get every child care center out. But through the Office of Sheriff College Child Care License, we'll definitely work, and I agree with you. I mean, that's up to each individual center or family child care center to do their individual training with their staff to do that. But maybe rotational-wise, instead of doing one annual evacuation, I know you're required to do monthly fire drills.
Correct.
In addition to that, maybe you might want to alternate that and do a shelter-in-place drill. That could be for either a severe weather event or a hazardous materials situation, where you do a shelter-in-place event. You actually practice shelter-in-place instead of just evacuating.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No problem.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes.
And I'll open it up to not just Councilman Street, but others. These gentlemen and their staff, they'll make themselves available to you. We will go over, we'll meet with you. If it's in the city, we'll obviously go through the Wilmington Office of Emergency Management. But we'll be there for you. It is unique. And yesterday wasn't easy for a lot of folks. I called my wife. She was at the school. I told her to stay in that school and don't come out until I call her back, you know, because it was kind of, it's rare. Let me say this too about yesterday. Whenever you have a situation like this where you have all these different organizations coming together for one event from all different directions, plus you have all this disaster, you have folks who are out of their homes now because there's a big tree sitting in your living room. It's always good to have one person at the head, organizing, coordinating, playing that leadership role. And that's what Dave did yesterday. We had great response from fire, from paramedics, the 911 center, Connective, Verizon, and they were all there. And what Dave did was stand in the middle and orchestrate that whole operation yesterday. So I applaud him for what he did yesterday. And that comes not only from me, but from county executive, who got stopped down there with the CAO and deputy CAO. And they called and said how great of a job this guy did yesterday. So I applaud him for his efforts, and we truly appreciate you. Even though his nickname is
Weatherman.
The Weatherman. So thank you, Dave, for yesterday. Thank you very much.
I know.
Thank you very much.
Any questions from anyone? Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
When I worked for the General Assembly, Representative Meyer and I took the CERT course. And I would strongly recommend that as you go around to civic association meetings, that you make them aware of what this program is, and that they maybe get somebody from their neighborhood, a couple people, civic associations, to take the course, because there's always a lag time between when something is going on within a neighborhood and when the emergency management people can get there. And this course just kind of solidifies in people's minds what first steps, without putting yourself in danger, can be taken to help stabilize the situation before the emergency management people get there. So I would just, again, strongly suggest that civic associations take advantage of the courses being offered.
Any other questions? Okay, Councilman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did we also train our personnel, like in our library for situations. I was actually at the library during all this for a very huge community meeting, but it was just status quo. It seemed like the air conditioner wasn't on there. It was very hot, but other than that, it was...
As a matter of fact, we're going through some training right now with all our library sites throughout the county. And I think, Joe, you're taking care of that right now. So we do provide that training to our own folks. We're going to do more of it. And Dave and I talked about this not long ago, that that they do that third training. It's good, but it's limited to 25 a session. Mm-hmm. I want them, or they're going to get up and do community service. Community groups, the civic association group, and just try to spread the word and get more people trained to be prepared for a disaster like yesterday.
So just to be clear on my question, like with the library, we train the personnel and they actually have cards and they expire, or it's for a certain amount of time, and the personnel do know?
Well, they can take the CERT training, and we also offer out CPR AED training to all our county employees on an annual basis now. But we also, as Joe has been taking the lead on, we've been going out to the individual libraries. We just spent time at their quarterly or their semi-annual training with about 25 employees, training them on our facility evacuation plan, what to do during a severe weather event or a fire evacuation drill, and then teaching them some fire safety with the extinguisher. Today we're just up at Eldmere Library going over with individually their staff, because a lot of their staff couldn't make that training. Doing the same thing, teaching them about the evacuation plan and what they can do. And it goes along with what Councilman Street says. Yes, I agree. You know, we teach them the evacuation drill, and we'll go and pull an evacuation drill, and everybody knows how to exit the building, but we probably need to alternate that similarly with our facilities, just like a lot of other organizations do, with shelter-in-place drills where people understand for outside severe events and hazardous material situations that stay inside instead of going outside. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, one more last thing about Rob's staff. We went down there today for a walkthrough, and there were all these folks with orange shirts running around. They were picking up leaves. They had chainsaws. They were volunteers from Home Depot. There were 30 of them on the ground helping the residents of Rob Scott, and there were even more coming. They had water. They had food. There were three different stores represented here from Home Depot. We had Boy Scouts out there from a neighboring community who had rakes and shovels. If you were there, you saw how this community pulled together to get that community back to where it was. It was very impressive to see that down at that Rob Scott. So I'm sure we'll do more for those folks. And if I might?
Absolutely, Director.
There's a group of county employees who have a lot of responsibility when it comes to our children at the various schools throughout Newcastle County. And that's these crossing guards. They are responsible to ensure that our kids get from one point to another, specifically the school and back. And I had asked the Lieutenant Dominic Gregory, retired police officer, sergeant, to come in and just talk just a little bit about the crossing guard operation. So with no further ado.
Thank you, Director.
Yes, sir.
And
good afternoon, Council.
If you would, Sarge, a half second here. Councilman Powers is in attendance.
Yeah, that's one thing. With the Home Depots, the district manager lives in the 6th District. He lives in the community, you know, in the Middletown area. He understands the area.
Middletown was there, the store from Bear, I think it was Fox Run, mm-hmm. and there's one over in Newark. Three stores were represented.
Council,
was that Brent?
Now, are those resources coordinated with our emergency management office, or is that something that they typically do on their own, or is there some point of contact?
I know Dave's booked from last question. Night.
Yeah, typically they do that. Both Lowe's and Home Depot are pretty avid. They have a disaster recovery and response teams. Right. and community assistance teams. And we've met previously with Home Depot on a couple basis. A lot of it had to do with logistics, getting supplies into their stores and assisting us in getting supplies in that we needed. But last night, the district manager came up to us at the center, with Joe and I, and introduced himself and actually, you know, asked permission and said, hey, this is our plan. We have the ability to drop off some water and donate supplies to the residents. Are you okay with that? Yeah. Other than checking with, you know, making sure they're not doing any work on the homes, obviously,
right,
without permitting and contracting through land use, we said, yeah, no problem, you know, come on in.
So that's basically one more resource and point of contact in the, especially in the recovery.
Yes, which is usually what, you know, is one of the harder parts of dealing with a disaster situation.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. George?
Yes, once again, good afternoon, Council. My name is Dominic Gregory. I'm one of two supervisors for the Newcastle County Crossing Guard Unit. Just to give you a basic outline of the crossing guards, we currently do public schools in Newcastle counties, which is the Brandywine School District, Colonial School District, Appaquimic School District, Red Clay, Christina, the Votex. We also do all public schools, private schools, and also Catholic schools. We currently have 138 regular guards, and the defined regular means they work a regular post. They usually do two posts in the morning, then repeat those two posts in the afternoon. So they may do a high school, like a middle and elementary, get the students in, they come back in the afternoon, and for dismissal time. We deal with all the districts. With the regular guards, we then have also, within that total of 137, we have 18 substitute guards. And what these guards do is they fill in when the regular guards are out either for illness, injury, or they take their personal time. A lot of times we have advance notice, or sometimes it's just, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, the regular guard calls up and says, hey, I'm sick, fill my post. So then I would call a substitute, and they would fill that post. The guards are all part-time. They get no medical benefits. The average guard, regular guard, is 20 hours a week. They cannot go past 25 hours. We really have no one doing 25 anymore, only because there's no more kindergarten. Everything's a full day now in Newcastle County. The budget, what happens is every October of every year, we send out a budget request to each district to see if there's an additional need for guards. They then send that back to us. Our budget does not impact the public safety budget. It is all based on taxpayers in their districts. The gentleman from the fiscal unit, either Mike or Ed, can comment further if need be on that. But what usually happens is, once we get the budget request back, in the beginning of every year, I will request 10 requisitions for maybe new guards. Because what happens throughout the years, we have guards retire and due to our workforce age, our range in age is from 31 to mid-80s. So unfortunate times, we have some guards that retire due to illness or some pass due to their age. So there's always a need to fill with substitutes. And what happens is once a regular guard retires or moves on, then we then take them with the substitute and they will fill that spot with seniority, of course, consideration. We deal with the transportation heads of each district. The districts are the ones that set the patterns and where the walkers are in the post. We do not set the post. I may have mentioned it, but we have approximately 275 posts. We have, though, in the last several years, the last 3 years mainly, we've been losing guards and posts because we are losing schools. Just this year now, we're losing Colwick and Colonial because it's going to be, I guess, a daycare. They will not need guards. We lost Lady of Fatima. Catholic Diocese are steady losing schools each year. Appaquimic High School and Middle School, we've lost the guard there because they're no longer needed. They have a circle. No need for a guard there. We're also losing Pike Creek Christian. They're going out. This is their last year. Tomorrow's their last day. So with budget restraints for the public schools as well as the economy, you know, the schools are losing and dropping and folding. So therefore, we have less guards and less posts to occupy. All right. A few other things. During the summer, we do provide programs as the pedestrian safety program throughout different districts. We have guards that work that. What they do, they deal with the community service group, with the police department, and along with the guards, they come in and put programs on, and safety-oriented programs in different community centers or schools for the kids, elementary and middle school ages. We also provide summer school, of course. Summer school starts for most districts on the 25th of this month, and usually summer school runs, they start at 8 o'clock and they're out by 11 o'clock. In summertime, there's always not a need for guards. District will put it out there first, but then we go out and we monitor. That's what I'll be doing here in the next couple of weeks, monitoring to see if there's a need. Because a lot of times, summer school, the kids don't go. I mean, there's a mindset. The kid doesn't really go in regular school. He's not going to go in the summer. So there's no need for kids crossing. There's no need for a guard to be out there. We call the district and say there's no walking patterns here. Are you okay with that? They come out and sit with us. Yes, we agree. Pull the guard. And that's how it works. And that's also how it works during the regular year, too, because different things change. You know, you may have a kid in fifth grade. You might have a lot of traffic in fifth grade in elementary. But then when they go to middle, there's no need for a guard there because patterns change. You know, they move on. They're going now taking a bus or different needs. But that, in a nutshell, is the Newcastle County Police, Crossing Guard Unit.
Do you
Crossing Guard Unit there, sir.
You still conduct the safety town in the summer months?
Well, yeah, but actually now that is being ran by the community services with the police department. We'll assist with that. We have guards to come out there. Before, where it was a two-week process for us, now guards come out through the day, and they just do a presentation a couple hours each day. But the public safety, the police department now runs it with the government center. They'll run that, and they still have it, yes. But our responsibilities with it has changed. But we still assist, yes, sir.
Okay. Councilman Smiley?
Yeah.
And then Councilman Powers?
Do private or charter schools, do they have the authority just to have one of their employees go out on the road and stop the traffic and direct?
Well, any school, the trickiest thing with schools a lot of times is the teachers' union. A lot of times, first and foremost, by 3:20, they're off the school property. And to get them past 3:20, it's pulling teeth. So depending on what the school is and what the contract states, they can have somebody out there. But on a charter school, for instance, you know, they'll call the district, and district will walk through. We just dealt with Pencator Charter. They're now closing after this year, but they were requesting guards, so we went out with district. And ultimate decisions with district, they'll come out and say, yes or no with that. But yes, charter schools can request a guard, or they can have their own personnel out there, but that's any school, that's their choice. But most of them don't, because they know it's provided by the district, so the guards
That's what I didn't know, because 273 in between the old Newcastle Middle School and Basin Road, there's a little charter school or private school, whatever, Newcastle City Limits, I think it is, next to Industrial Greenways. And I came by there the other day and saw it looked like he was dressed like a teacher, whatever, just ran out in the middle of the road in front of everybody and all of a sudden stopped them.
Yes.
To start flagging buses out. And I'm thinking, you know what? Wrong one, you'd have been a piece of the asphalt.
Yeah, and on that situation there, that's just bus traffic. So they didn't require any guards because there's no pedestrian traffic. However, next year, that area may change there because the Colwood kids now are going to go to, if you're familiar with the old William Penn High, which is now, that is now going to be an elementary. So right now, we're being told there's no walkers. It's just going to be bus traffic. So if it's just bus traffic, but now you have three schools in that little stretch carry down and all there. So it's going to be a backup getting in or out of Old Newcastle when that happens next year. It's just a matter of what our responsibilities are going to be next year as far as the crossing guards.
Thank you.
From a communication standpoint, I know at one time there were some cell phones that were actually out there being utilized by our crossing guards.
Yes, sir.
What form of communications do they have available for contact to the department if they need help?
Well, first, there's no more cell phones. That was, I guess, a trial period. And from what I gathered from the guards and everybody else, it did not go well. Remember, our workforce is an older workforce. They don't like computers. They don't like cell phones. But they do communicate. They can call directly into the office. And since I've been there, we also put in a hotline number. I have a number that we update. Like, for instance, every night on Friday, we'll update the closures for next week, any closures or changes. And I can do that from my home, or I can do that when I'm in the office. and they can reach out and dial that number and get any updates they may need in case they have a last-minute school closings, or they just call in the office, or they call myself or Michelle's cell phones. So communication is not a problem, and it's also geared, I want to say, I guess for their age group. We are trying to get everybody to email. Like I said, the 137, only three have given us email address. Three.
Are there any incidents where they're out, you know, at a guard position with the public where they need to get a hold of us and have difficulty in getting a hold of us from a standpoint of having something available to them?
Well, they do have, a majority of them do have their own cell phones, and they prefer to use that, so they will call that there. Or also, we deal with the schools too, and they know if there's emergency, they'll indicate, you know, they'll indicate that to the teachers in the parking lot, and they call. It's never been a problem where if they've had a problem, that we cannot come out there, or they cannot communicate.
I mean, they're dealing, as you know, and we all know, I mean, they're dealing with some folks that aren't hurt to get to work. Yes. Sometimes they don't have the time or respect for the crossing guard, and you know, some of the intersections like at Landers Lane and 9 is not really where the teacher can observe what's going on. So just concerned as far as their safety, and I know typically there's more than one there, but you're saying that they have their own...
Well, they have their own cell phones, yes. When we pull the cell phones, we then poll how many they have, and the majority of them just wanted their cell phones and use their cell phones, and they do. And the area you're talking about, yes, we have the two ladies right at Route 9 in Landers, then we have one down in front of the school, one down in Eisenberg. But the lady at Route 9 in Landers, I wouldn't mess with her anyway, no. So I don't think she'll have a problem with anybody out there.
Good. Councilman Powers and Councilman Street. Councilman,
you may have answered part of it when Councilman Smiley's. With Apo High and Bunker Hill, really there weren't, I don't think, ever kids really crossing there. And it's really just the direct at the circle, and I think I called you about it.
They did, and I mean, that was the district put it. Greg to the whiskey, you ever dealt with Greg down there? He's the one, you know, he said we need a guard, they were crossing the guard. But then after this year, we reviewed it again. I said, Greg, why is a guard there? You know, because I'm getting parents calling in here in the school. He looked at it again and said, yeah, you're right, we don't need a guard. Because this is a circle, and the circles serve that purpose where it's flowing
traffic. In
yes.
The circle she was let the buses out.
Yes, and that was, you know, she was told by just saying, we got to let the buses out. But the circle, you know, kind of eliminates any problems and any backup. So she was hurting the problem more than helping, just because it was a new construction in a new school. So they realized that, so that's why we no longer have her down there.
Councilman Street?
No, I just have a concern, number one, safety for our guards, and number two, you know, and the one I see the most is Councilman Letta's district in Ellesmere. You know, the guard goes to stop traffic, goes to the
light box.
To the box, and then folks want to speed through, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then all of them down in that general vicinity. School bus stops, some folks will stop, some folks won't. And, you know, those kind of things that have always concerned me. And I don't know what above and beyond what we're already doing that we can do, but it's always a concern. And you know, once they go past, it's not a whole lot can be done unless somebody gets a license number, so forth and so on. And the only thing, my point being, some of those situations where you have the box, maybe we can have some discussion, Mr. Director, with folks who put up lights and, you know, have the ability to see the folks who want to ignore the change in the traffic signal, have to endure some consequences for
camera,
that's what I meant, I'm sorry, thank you.
And in those instances there, we do. I mean, people are in a big hurry. They do run the light. They get the tag. We research the tag, and we have the county police or whatever district it may be in, or Ellesmere is a good one. Ellesmere works with us. They'll run the tag. They'll go out, and if they can write a citation, they will. Also, with the light box with Del Dot now, light boxes are going to be a mute point. Del Dot is in this big push, and they're changing everything to now the pedestrian lights. They want you to be able to push the pedestrian lights 24/7. And they're doing that everywhere, so that is also causing a decrease and what guards we're needing, because, you know, they want a kid to come out there and push the ped, you know, across. And we've dealt with Del Don, and we're continuing on a daily basis to deal with them on the ped lights in the situation. The ped lights in certain areas do work, and it makes it safer. But there's some areas the pet you have to control with what they call the old pickle. Like William Penn High School, them guards there, you have to control with the pickle. The ped light does not work there. We tried. And they know that. Put it in the new ped lights, and we'll call them. We work with Del Don. There's things they can tweak to make things smoother and the flow of traffic run smoother. But they are not... They don't save everything. The ped lights are not a perfect fit in some situations. Majority of them, yes, but there's some that we still have to do with the pickle, and the guards have to get traffic flowing with a timer. But the ped lights are the thing of the future, and that's happened rapidly as we speak. They're putting up new ped lights almost, you know, each week.
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I'm sure there are reasons for it. I'm somewhat disappointed with that. Cell phone programs no longer there. I was there at the kickoff, and you know the way it was. I believe you were there. That Verizon was donating the phones and the chargers to the county for the crossing guards. Of course, I mean, I heard directly from someone in my district weren't real happy because the phone was only set to dial 911. That's all it would do.
That was my concern too, and we did address that when they do. All of our guards, when they're working a post, especially, they do have their cell phones, and they prefer them. We were willing to bring that back, but they all did not want cell phones back. And then when using a cell phone that they were not paying for, they were lost. 50% of them were lost when we tried to retrieve them, and it was just not in their charges. So, but their own phones, which they were comfortable with and had an understanding with, that's what they were more comfortable with, and it's worked out quite well. And if it's in a pinch, they know, call 911, the road officer will come out, or if it's something we need to address but not right at that moment, they'll call the office, and then we look into the situation. Yes, sir.
I think if you could carry a message back to all of our crossing guards, I think that all of us as council recognize and appreciate the job that they do, and you know, some of them may be seniors. But I can tell you, the ones I observe out there going up and down the highways, they do a tremendous job.
Yes, they do.
And they don't have an easy job, because we all see all the nuts that are out there every day of the week, aggressive drivers, and they don't want to stop. And I question the thing with younger children of these ped lights, because I think having a grown adult out there and a reflective vest saying County Crossing Guard on it is a much better deterrent than a child just pressing and praying to God that somebody's going to stop for them, especially for the younger ones. So
that is correct.
You know, I think that Del Dot and technology, they can do, you know, all they want. But our crossing guards do a tremendous job.
Yeah.
And I think that if we check back, there's quite a few of them that have really put themselves in harm's way on a few occasions where children have been not struck by a vehicle. Councilman Street, then Councilman Powers.
He was first.
Okay, Councilman Powers.
Some of this ped lights, and I know we went over some stuff. The kids have to get out to hit the button.
Yeah, we'll
see. And see, they got to cross the traffic that's merging. So, especially with young kids, I mean, we questioned that when we were sitting with the one in Middletown.
Yeah, that was
it's just it's not a good situation, even with, we were looking at a high school.
Well,
and especially with them pulling out to leave.
Well, the new one that you're talking about, the one in 299, that's why we keep guards there, because they make the ped light. You got to cross the shoulder on a small island, about as big as probably half of this table, where you push the ped light, and then it changes. Well, just getting across the shoulders at risk, and then a small island, and then that's why we still keep guards there, and you're going to have to do stuff like that. And our guards know now, you know, they don't let them cross. The guard will cross, push it on the island, shut the shoulder down, get the kids across. But yeah, Del Dot, you know, I'm not their engineer. I don't claim to be the smartest guy in the room, but their designs and that, and I express my concerns that, you know, you need to have that, you know, before you get to the shoulder. They're making them cross the shoulder, hit the ped, stand on a small island, then cross. Not a smart idea.
I think, you know, that's why we pushed to keep the crossing guards there.
Yes.
When we learned that you all would have to get out on this little island to hit the button. And especially when you say little kids. Now, we were really concerned with high school kids. And there's a lot that cross there at Dove Run.
I think if we, as the Crossing Guard Division, has concern over the way something's being designed by DelDOT, then that message needs to be carried by our department and the government back to DelDOT through the state, because we all see some of the things that DelDOT designs. And the engineer isn't out there when it's raining, when it's icy and snowy and everything out there. And I just fear putting these children in harm's way in the future of not having a crossing guard, a grown adult doing here. And we're probably going to put the crossing guard in danger more by them having to cross and everything. So, I mean, I think it's something that we ought to nip in the bud. And if you're saying
we have made strides. I didn't mean to cut you off, Mr. President. Mm-hmm. We have made strides now. We actually now we've changed the size of the island, and now also we're getting to go back where they're putting the ped light. They're on the shoulder. The new first and greatest design was small island ped light out. That is now being changed over. You look at the most recent one they did off of Neyman's Road for Concord High School with us out there. And we do work with one of the good engineers out there. Not saying there's a bad one, but a guy that we have a good relationship with has changed designs around on a few of them. And they've agreed with a lot of the concerns. And they know, it's like anything new, just like we had new stuff. They know there's things that need to be tweaked. They know there's things to be changed. So they're not against that. They are willing to do that, and they're willing with safety. And we have been working, and we'll work. So I was just with them before I came here today on a few things, and Michelle does it also. So we are working with them, and they are open for suggestions, and they do seem to carry them out.
Councilman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think that you and the presenter have excluded a major factor as relates to crossing guards and their interaction with kids, and that is the fact that our crossing guards very often serve as a source of motivation, a source of inspiration and encouragement for kids. And sometimes a kid leaves home, has a bad day, crossing guard can look at that kid, does look at that kid, and try to make it better, coming the same way. And the other thing, they take care of each other. The older crossing guards, the primary reason they won't get disrespected is because the kids won't allow it. And, you know, that positive interaction between our youngers and our elders, I think, is something that should be highlighted, and we should all give the guards and the whole system credit for it. It's very, very positive, and I think it's very, very important.
Thank you, Councilman. Any question from Council or any further input? Okay. I want to thank you very much for a very informative presentation, and like I say, get the word back that, you know, County Council appreciates everything that your folks do day in and day out. So.
I will. Thank you, Council.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Director, anything else at this time?
No, sir. That's it.
Okay. All right. We'll move to other. Any other? Councilwoman Diller?
I just want to thank Dave and everybody who helped out in Rob Scott last night. I teach sociology, and we always talk about different leadership styles. And, you know, I say to them, when's the one time you need one person in charge? And people look at me, and I'm like, think about it. You know, think about Katrina, think about all of these issues, and they're like, oh, a natural disaster. So I'm going to start using you as my example, Dave. When's the one time you need somebody in charge? You need Dave Carpenter in charge for a natural disaster.
Thank you,
Kevin. So thank you very much.
Joey said be careful with that.
Okay. As long as the attorney doesn't start taking pictures and put me in the paper.
Okay. Director?
Just one last thing. I named off a number of agencies that were very supportive of us last night and today. The one group that I failed to mention was the Red Cross. I was talking to someone today, and the Red Cross gave them a credit card for food, and so they were very, very helpful to us, and they still are as we speak. So,
Director, I'll just add off.
Please identify yourself for the record. That's okay.
Dave Carpenter, Junior Emergency Management Coordinator. And I'll just echo what the director said. I mean, I usually, most people ask me how I
work in emergency management. I usually tell them my left arm is my office assistant, Diane, so if anybody ever knows that she sends a lot of the information out and keeps me straight, my right arm is the Red Cross. Without them, in any situation we've had, we'd be at a loss, I think, from the county, because, I mean, from our perspective, they are the first and foremost agency that we reach to in those situations, and on a daily basis, you know, the fire service, the police are reaching out to them for any situations that they have, that they run into, that somebody gets displaced from their home. At this point, we're also going to be working with them. The transition, we'll be working with Allen Madison Department of Community Services, that if any of these residents need longer-term housing, we will sit down with them and go through that client need and see what they we can forecast, whether we work with the Delaware Apartment Association to move them into an apartment based upon what their insurance can and can't provide for that matter. And again, it's just, don't use just me. They really, Joe and you know, Dave, they helped me out, the planners helped me out. Like I said, there's a slew of other people in emergency management that just really help support that. So thank you. But go ahead.
It's a team. Yeah. It's a team.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Public comment?
Motion to listen to him.
Chief, would you please identify yourself? Yeah, you can come on up. And welcome.
Council, thank you for having us here today. My name's Tom Finicaro. I'm chief of Brandy 100 Fire Company. With me today is Richard Perillo. He's the president. We thought it was important to address some of the comments that were made at the county council meeting in reference to an incident that occurred in on Governor Prince in the Brandy 100 district involving a motor vehicle accident. And if I may say, just off that subject, with Dave Carpenter, get off the subject, the communication center did a marvelous job by toning out and warning the companies up north, as Brandy 100 is. They did it on several times, talking about the incident and sightings and be prepared. So the communications did an excellent job. But the reason we're here today is the comments that were made at the county council meeting in reference to a comment that I made. Apparently it was something to do with I told somebody to take their kind back to the city. I was never brought up that way. I don't speak that way. I don't think that way. I never said that. I did have a conversation with the fire chief from the city of Wilmington, and it revolved around him responding to the county. Another comment that was made that the fire, it was a fully involved car fire into this tractor trailer. The fire was out by the time the equipment got there. Firefighters never put anything out. After the patient was transported by helicopter, the chief and I had a conversation, and basically that's what it boiled down to. Never did I say anything about take your kind, and trust me, I would never ever say anything like that. I don't think that way. I don't speak that way. So I just kind of wanted to. I thank you for having us here and taking the time to listen to us. But I just wanted to kind of straighten that out. If there's any other questions, I can try to answer.
Councilman? Yeah. Councilman Street?
I don't throw no stone in my hand. Obviously, I made the comment, and I got comments that I made were given to me by the Wilmington police chief, the fire chief, and I specifically, before I made my remarks, asked them for permission to reiterate what was told to me. So, you have, you stated your position and your version of what happened. Certainly he stated his position and his version of what happened. I wasn't there, but, something happened that was not friendly between the two. You have your side, he has his side, which I frankly am concerned about in terms of interaction with our fire companies, and I hope that we can find a way for all of us to work together and assume responsibility collectively and professionally with mutual respect in doing what has to be done with public safety. But certainly I would not have made the comments that I made on council floor had those comments not been given to me, and had I not received permission from the fire chief to reiterate what he had informed me.
For 8100 has always and will always work very well with the city of Wilmington and the fire department. Never had any problems, and I look forward to working with them in the future. Never did I ever say anything about them doing a terrible job there. You know, I hope that they didn't say anything like that, but they did a good job, and you know, that's what
the comment that I made, were limited for the most part to what I said on council floor, and as to the other things, that's not what I said, which is this conversation about. And what other folks have said, you know, that's between other folks. I know what I said on council floor at that meeting that night, and I stand by what I said based on what was communicated to me directly from the chief himself.
Before I go to you, Councilman, I just want to mention I've known the chief for many years, and his involvement in the fire department, his leadership role. And when Brandy 100, both the chief and president contacted me to ask could they speak under comment here at the council meeting, we encouraged it. And, you know, what the chief is explaining, that's the type of person and fire chief that I know. And I have to trust and believe what you've said here today. And I know that there were some comments that come back to me, and I'll share them. And since that particular problem has been resolved with the weapon, the fire chief was wearing a weapon that day. And I had a firefighter from Brandy 100 advise me that when the conversation was going on, that the fire chief put his hand on the weapon. And that's hearsay also. But what I'm saying here is that I appreciate the fact that you've came here for one, and I have known you for a long time, and I trust that Brandy 100 has and will continue to have a good working relationship with our city fire department.
Yes, sir. So,
Councilman Street.
Well, you just confirmed for me what I thought was the genesis of the whole debate about the chief carrying the gun, which is not an issue now because he's not carrying the gun. But I still maintain that the genesis, at least part of the genesis, between that verbal altercation between this chief and the woman's chief started on the front page of the paper. It started right here in this room. And that's why the grant was so important to me, because this any fire company, any entity point of view is just something I don't think this government, this council should be a part of and wants to be a part of, and we have to go forward. Something else is going to happen close to the city board, and there's going to be a need to save a life, to put out a fire, and quite frankly, you're the chief. He's the chief. For both of you going to be the chief for some period of time. Quite frankly, I think you guys need to figure that out and provide the leadership necessary so that the companies can work together. Everybody can be a Monday morning quarterback, and it's easy to place blame. I wasn't there. And I'm not going to act like I know what happened, because I was not there. I'm concerned about how it got started, and more concerned about where it goes from here. And ultimately, the ultimate concern is a resolution and at least an agreement to work together to the benefit of the public we all serve.
Councilman Cartier.
No, I just want to thank Chief Finocchiaro and President Perillo for coming out here tonight to clear the air, offer their point of view, and I too would you know, look to continue cooperation between Wilmington Fire Company and Brandywine Fire Company, because certainly there's plenty of emergencies they're all responding to there. 495 is constantly got car wrecks going on, and you know, we got all those chemical plants there, and we've got a high demand for you know, the services provided by both fire companies in the area. But I just want to thank you for coming out today, both of you, and you know, if there's any way I could facilitate a dialogue, I'm there to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. We appreciate you taking the time to come in. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Public comment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made and second adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So voted.
I'm torn.
Executive committee meeting started.